Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 248 with John Chalfon. I like those numbers, Kristen. 248.
Yeah,
it's like 248. Who do you appreciate?
I like that.
You see what I'm saying? That's good.
Yeah.
Anyway, John is a really cool guy. I've known him for a long time. He and I never actually worked together, but we have a lot of close friends, mutual friends. Really interesting guy, an amazing animator. And actually one of our close friends, Brandon Davis, we know each other through Brandon, and Brandon is an absolutely amazing person, and he's actually been on the podcast as well. So you guys should check out the Brandon Davis episode at some point. I think it's like in the 50s, something mm-hmm. like that. But what did you think of this podcast, Kristen?
Oh, it was really interesting. Oh, first, you guys, I liked how you guys drank your rye whiskey the whole time. Made me really want some. So he's actually up north from where I am from in California, and he got to visit Lucas Valley Ranch when he was young. So that's mm-hmm. kind of what made him interested in animation and film.
Yeah.
And then he also started his own animation studio with his friends, which seemed fun.
Yeah.
And David Lynch and Cartier. I'll just leave you with that because that story is cool.
Yeah. David Lynch.
That was fun.
He does some really interesting things. In fact, he's now, his title is creative director at Sky Carousel. But even that, he's like, he doesn't really talk too much about it because he has to kind of keep a lot of things on a DL.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's a very, very cool guy. He does a lot of really creative work. I think he's just done some really incredible things. So really appreciate having him on, and can't wait to have him back when he can announce more of the cool stuff that he's been doing. But let's get on to some events or things that are going on, Kristen. What's going on?
All right. So you can find out all of these events at chaosgroup.com/events.
Mm-hmm.
One we have been talking about is November 4th in Vancouver. We will have a chaos meetup.
Yep.
You can find out how V-Ray can create stunning arc viz projects, and our own Alon will be there.
Yes, and he will be showcasing Lavina, like you said, and so that's going to be really cool. I'm actually setting him up with a new computer, and it's working great and looks really cool. So can't wait for you guys to check out all the cool stuff that's going on there. Mm-hmm. What else is going on?
All right, so we have about a week left of our Total Chaos 2020 call for speakers.
Yes.
So if you or anyone you know is interested, go to chaosgroup.com/become a speaker. We are looking for talented artists and developers who have a vision to share or a unique perspective on the newest developments in computer graphics.
Right. So it's about a week left. What is the mm-hmm. actual deadline? Do you know?
I think it's November 1st.
November 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you guys are listening to this podcast late, unfortunately, that time has passed, but if you're one of the guys who listen to it when it comes out, you only have a week left to make any proposals, including proposing yourself as a speaker is mm-hmm. absolutely fine. And then tell us about the student rendering challenge.
So this is called the Undiscovered Student Rendering Challenge. Mm-hmm. It did start October 1st, and it will go until December 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And our tag is Explore Your Imagination and Render the Undiscovered. And you can find the link on our Facebook page at facebook.com/chaosgroup.
Perfect. Now, for the podcast itself, you guys can follow us on facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast. You can also check out our page, which is chaosgroup.com/CG Garage. If you guys have any ideas or things you want to communicate about with us about the podcast, including guests you'd like to have on, it's labs@chaosgroup.com. And then finally, one thing I want to remind you guys is we would love to get more reviews from you guys. So if you guys would like to, you know, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, I would love to have that happen. So if you guys listen to us on Apple Podcasts, don't forget to give us a rating and a review as well. That'd be really appreciated. That being said, please enjoy this incredible podcast with Mr. John Chalfon.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
We're gonna go ahead. Open this rye whiskey. Okay, have you had this before?
Yes, it's just one sip.
Okay,
I've given it as gifts before.
It's a beautiful bottle.
Oh yeah, I thought so too. And the receiver of that was very complimentary and is a big whiskey fan and loved that. So
okay.
So then I went out and bought myself a bottle, and I bought you a bottle, and I was like, better have a sip of this before I give it away again and make sure it's good. So I had only one sip.
Right. So it's few rye whiskey distilled from grain, artisan spirit. Yeah, it looks really nice. And it's got a small batch serial number.
Yeah.
So it is a small batch whiskey, which is good. Cheers, John.
Cheers.
Very good. Very good. Look at this. We started this podcast.
Yeah.
How's it feel?
Good.
Good. Good. Good. Yeah. All right. So last time I saw you was at SIGGRAPH.
SIGGRAPH, yes.
We were just at the Netflix VFX talk.
Yes.
Which was kind of interesting.
Yeah. My neighbor, Paul Graff, was there talking about Stranger Things.
Oh, right. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
That was the whole reason I went to that. It was, I was just kind of blown away this last season.
Yeah. It was really good. It was really good. And you were also there with our mutual friend, Brandon, who is a good friend of mine as well.
Mm-hmm.
Really great guy. And he's actually been on the podcast, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then he and I were talking, and I said, John, you should be on the podcast too. And Brandon says, absolutely, get John to be on the podcast. But I think it's a really great idea because I'm sure you have an origin story that's very interesting.
Origin stories, yeah. I guess as a kid, I used to really be into television in the Bay Area in the 80s and 90s.
Okay, we're in the Bay Area.
Marin County.
Marin County, okay.
Just north of Sausalito.
Uh-huh.
And there was a TV show called Robotech.
Okay.
That I was a huge fan of as a little kid. Uh-huh. I used to run home from school when I get home, I would pop a cassette into the VCR and, uh-huh. and record every single episode. And I did that for an entire season. Right. And then I would constantly rewatch
every episode.
And then all my math homework and all my schoolwork would be covered with Veritech fighter battles. And
right.
Yeah. That kind of started, you know, piqued my interest in animation and you know, it was the first TV show I saw where a character died, and it really just got me as a little kid, and I was right. like, whoa, I didn't know this could happen.
Right.
I thought it was all supposed to be hunky-dory.
Right. Yeah, you must have been pretty young, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty little at that time. But after that, I had a buddy in high school who knew somebody at Skywalker Sound.
Yeah. Okay.
And they got
in Marin. Yeah.
Yeah. They got a tour. Mm-hmm. And they could bring a friend. And so I got a tour of Lucas Valley Ranch at a very young age. I think it was about 16 or 17.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of blew my mind. Like, I immediately knew that I'd always been very creative. I immediately knew that there could be an outlet for this kind of creative energy that could be quite successful if done right. So that kind of made me want to then pursue film, animation, and all that. I later went to film school after going to junior college for a bit.
Okay.
And in junior college, I hung out with a bunch of friends at the computer lab and started using 3DS Max, or no, 3D Studio R4.
Right. So in DOS.
Yeah.
DOS. This is where our white whiskers come from.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And at that time, like, I was just – and, you know, it's still kind of true today. Like, more creatively focused than technically focused.
Yep.
You know, I was very much drawing and photography, and that was my thing. It wasn't so much
learning how to rig characters.
Yeah, exactly. I did a tutorial in R4. I think it was to create a globe. Uh-huh. And it just I was repulsed by it and said to myself, you know, I don't think this 3D stuff is for me.
Right.
But after junior college, we all transferred to different state colleges and universities, and we all moved back from Santa Rosa, mm-hmm. to the Bay Area, like San Rafael and Marin County. And at that point, we all kind of moved back in with our parents, you know, our families. And having had the freedom of being a kid away from home and then being in pursuing a career or pursuing a goal and then moving back home and suddenly dealing with all the chaos of being at home, we were like, we should put our computers someplace else other than home where we can go and play, have fun.
Okay. So you guys found a place to put all your computers together?
Yeah. So we rented a little office about the size of this room.
Okay.
Maybe a little smaller, in a graphic design building in downtown San Rafael.
Okay.
And during all this time, I had been a very avid video game player.
Right. Well, I can imagine with the Robotech stuff.
Yeah. My first job, I think, was a busboy. My second job was selling video games.
Right.
And I stayed with that through college.
Right.
So I'd been very, very attuned to every single, you know, console. I was a huge fan of the Neo Geo, and Samurai Shodown was a giant. It was like just made a huge impact on me as a young adult. So for me, I was bringing video game systems to our hangout spot.
Uh-huh. You basically had a treehouse.
Yeah, it was like a young adult treehouse.
Young adult treehouse with computers.
Yeah. And one of our group was, we all had day jobs, right? So my day job was video game sales. Mm-hmm. And one of my buddies, his day job was a reseller for a software company in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
Another buddy, I forget what he did. I think he was working for SGI. We ended up with a bunch of little SGI logos.
Okay.
And I used to take them for the longest time and stick them on my phones. So as I get phones throughout the year, I would stick an SGI logo on it.
Right.
Or a Dell computer, I'd stick an SGI logo on it because I wanted to be part of the cool kids crowd. but anyway, my buddy who is a reseller in the city had a client come through, and that client bought a bunch of copies of 3D Studio Max or 3D Studio. I think it was
four. You said
I want to say at that point I think it was Max.
Okay, so Max One.
Max One.
What
yeah.
year is we talking about?
We're talking 96.
It'd be the very early R1.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it was like the first. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Clay Studio was a thing back then. That was what I was into. It was like the only aspect of that. It was a plugin for Max Metaball plugin where you could like take spheres and stuff and yeah.
Yes. In fact, no, I think that was actually an R4 because I think that's what I used for my architecture thesis is I used that Metaball Clay Studio thing. I forgot the name of it.
Clay Studio.
Yeah. I forgot until you just reminded me. But yeah, that was.
I was using that to try to make characters.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay.
So, but they'd all come out super high poly. You
know, right.
Because it's just whatever generated the faces who just off the hook.
Right.
So anyway, that buddy of mine, he was working as a reseller in the city. He had a client come through, order a bunch of copies of Max.
Mm-hmm.
That client said they were doing a TV show, an animated TV show. And he said, well, we have a studio. If you guys need a shop to work on the show, you know, we can help out. And he came back and we all met, like there was four of us at that point, and we kind of panicked.
But you guys never intended to be a studio.
I think we did. We had aspirations. You know, Toy Story was – we had heard about Pixar. I think Toy Story was either out or coming out. And ILM, of course, and, you know, all the – we had big visual effects aspirations and animation aspirations. And when that – possible contract came through, they wanted some things on their side. Like they didn't just want to give it up to a bunch of kids.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to know if we were legit. And so we called all our friends and said, hey, come over and set up your computer and a desk.
So
it looks like we're a studio. Yeah. And we somehow
– Did you get a receptionist too?
No. We somehow moved from this little tiny room to the theater arts building.
Okay.
Where it was a theater building that had been scheduled for remodeling or demolition, and we managed to rent a space in this artist loft area, which was just this extended storage room.
Uh-huh.
It had a a lower space in the back and that led out to an alleyway. Right. And then below that, next to the staircase, it had a, I would say it's maybe a quarter the size of this room space.
Okay. This is a small room, just so people know.
We're in a very small room. So the main room was like twice the size of this. The back room was probably about the size of this, but then the storage closet space was a quarter of the size of this.
Right.
And the storage closet space we converted into
server room of some kind?
No, we actually converted that into our entertainment center. We put a giant screen TV on one side, painted the ceiling purple, drywalled the room, and put a two-person love seat couch on the other side. So it was literally 3 feet between the TV and the two-person love seat couch and a PlayStation. So that's where we would go to play video games.
Right.
Anyway, we somehow managed to get into this space, and this producer who had this show came down, looked at the space, looked at all of us with our computer set up, mm-hmm. and said, okay, we'll give you an episode. We'll give you 4 episodes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we panicked again.
Right, because now you have to actually do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first check, I think, went to software and hardware.
Mm-hmm.
We leased a bunch of computers. We leased a renter farm. No, I think we just outright bought them. Mm-hmm. And then we started hiring people left and right, like whoever could fit the bill.
What was the name of your company?
It was called Lumens.
Lumens, okay.
Yeah. Toby Olson.
Okay, yeah.
He was one of our partners. Brandon Davis.
Yeah, Brandon.
We brought him on to help us with the show. He was one of the senior guys in the area that like knew more. Like, that was the thing is like when you start a company, the first thing – I've always tried to do is hire people that are smarter than me.
Yep.
You know, it's like, but then you got to tell them what to do. So it's, you know, it's always a struggle, but it's always interesting. And we hired David Strapinas.
Oh, David.
Yes.
Wow.
I think he actually, we were talking to him online and the next day he showed up.
Wow.
Like, he flew out on his own dime, just got excited, and at that point we were kind of like, wow, this guy's here.
Yeah, he's a character.
He's enthusiastic. We might as well hire him. I mean, his animation was good, his reel was good, you know.
Oh yeah,
bring him on. And that was a really interesting summer. I mean, that was the summer of 96, I want to say 96, maybe it was 97.
Okay.
It was 96. Or was it 97? I don't know. Anyway, we were doing, I'd say, one episode every 3 weeks, 2 weeks, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, something like that. We had a contract for 4 episodes. They pulled the last episode because we were taking too long.
Okay.
And the last episode was supposed to be all profit for us.
Right.
And so that left us kind of in a tough spot.
Right.
We also got in a situation where we promised, like, you know, when the last episode dropped or was ending, everybody kind of in the studio panicked, like, are we going to have a job? Because we don't know what else is coming. And we said, you know, don't sweat it. We guarantee at least 2 weeks.
Okay.
While we figure out what's next.
Right.
Which, you know, in hindsight was the rest of the money we had in the bank.
Right.
So 2 weeks later, everybody had a real cut and was kind of out the door.
Right.
And then as a studio, as the partners, we spent the following summer. We moved the shop, I think, to downtown Novato. We spent the following summer or the rest of that year, you know, kind of hanging out and playing video games. At least I was doing that a lot. We had Toby knew Kreshmir.
Okay.
And that was the beginning of Afterburn, and we talked him into letting us publish Afterburn for him.
Okay.
So as a studio, we published the first edition of that.
Oh.
And Brandon was using that quite extensively. And we had the only render farm in town that could render Afterburn stuff. So we were rendering
Afterburn, just so people know, it was a plugin for Max that did a lot of smoke and fire effects. Now, it wasn't a fluid sim specifically, not the same kind of thing you do.
Just a volumetric.
Just a volumetric thing.
Yeah. And it just made incredibly cool. I remember seeing all these.
It was at the time, it was one of the better looking things for sure.
Yeah. I was, of course, not into
pyrotechnics
at all. I was into creatures and characters and was busy doing fan art for Oddworld. Oh, roll back real quick. During the production of that TV show, Oddworld was the big game that was out, and we would all Toby would be playing that in the little entertainment center down in the sort of basement. And when he would get through a level, they'd start playing a cutscene, and we would all just the whole studio would rush into that little basement to watch the cutscene. Right. So there'd be like, you know, well, there was 9 of us. So on any given cutscene, there'd be like 5 to 7 of us sitting there, like 6 guys in the love seat, spilling out into the hallway, trying to like watch this cutscene. But so that inspired us a lot. And I, after the show wrapped, was making fan art basically of Oddworld characters and cutting a reel myself. And from there, I sent my reel out to, I think, Pixar. I want to say PDI and Blizzard. Yeah.
Okay. So down Southern California.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I got a call from Blizzard and they flew me out. And Mark Kern, I think, was the head of HR back then. And they flew me out and I just kind of blew my mind. Like, I had been to a CES. I think the first CES I went to was in 97.
That's right. We talked about this years ago. You did The Crow.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll get to that. But anyway, you went to Blizzard.
Yeah, so I went to Blizzard. And that was that for me, Blizzard was like my real art education. At this point, I dropped out of school. Mm-hmm. Like when our little animation studio took off, suddenly we realized, wait a minute, we could have a career. We're getting these really big checks from this production company, and we've got this possible company thing brewing.
Why would we
stay in school?
Right. You know? We've already started.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I think a couple of us stayed in school, but a couple of us didn't. Mm-hmm. Off and running. But for me, Blizzard was, I consider that my real art education.
Interesting.
I just learned how to, it stopped becoming a, you know, when you're working in television production, especially at that stage, you know, they were giving us the models, they were giving us storyboards, and they were giving us sound files, and we were doing everything else. Mm-hmm. And it was just like rush to the finish line as fast as possible. At Blizzard, it was more like, okay, now you have pretty much everything and sit around and think up ideas and make something cool.
Right. So you had freedom to think about those cinematics.
Oh yeah, totally. Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, in those days it was a different, there was only 9 guys when I started there.
So this is the cinematic department.
This is the cinematic department, not Blizzard. There was like 300 people, 250, 300 people in Blizzard.
Right.
Maybe that's a little high actually. Cause there was team 1, team 2, and then QA, and then cinematics. Like
I bet just down at Blizzard, there's like 1,000 people there.
Oh, easily.
Easily.
Yeah.
It's several blocks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they have a campus with the gates and everything. Yeah. It's insane.
So the one I remember was the Diablo cinematic. Was that the first one?
That was the first thing I worked on when I was at Blizzard. So when I got there, they had just finished Brood War and everybody was having a party.
Uh-huh.
So like literally my first day was silly stringing the art director of Team 2. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, we'd just sneak up and with bottles of silly string and like blast him head to toe.
Okay.
That was my first day at Blizzard.
Wow. That's cool.
After that, Diablo 2 kicked in.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty awesome project. We had a tremendous amount of flexibility. There was a brief that came in with all these different character descriptions.
Uh-huh.
And being a doodler that I am, I went through the brief and like drew at least 1 or 2 drawings for every single character that was described.
Right.
And they were all horrible. Like my art was awful.
Back then.
I mean, I was impressed with the patience of management to like look at that stuff and be like, okay, we'll put this up on the wall or we'll consider this. And
right.
And one of the sketches I did for the narrator for that game actually became a piece of concept art that was used.
Oh, really?
For his design. So
he was the guy in the jail, right?
Marius, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing that I probably haven't seen that cinematic in 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Right? And I still remember, like, there's a guy in a jail. Mm-hmm. I remember the crow, which was...
Well, that was Warcraft 3.
Warcraft 3 was crow.
Warcraft 3 was crow.
Right.
The guy in the jail and the spider. There was a little spider that crawled across the floor. And yeah, that was a really interesting project because I just kind of jumped headfirst into something I'd never been in before. And then during Diablo, I remember very distinctly... well, two things I remember very distinctly. Playing a lot of paddle tennis.
Okay.
And I had this smile that I just could not turn off.
Okay.
Ear to ear. Just, I could not turn off the smile. Oh, it was just, I don't know. Like every time anybody walked by, I was just smiling. Like I just couldn't, I'm not normally that
right.
ecstatic.
Right.
But I just had this smile that I couldn't turn off. The other thing was, there was a point where as we were getting towards delivery of the game, the entire company would shut down and we'd be tasked with playing Diablo.
Right.
Just play through level this and give us feedback or encounter a bug and log it. And they would pay us, I think, an hourly rate on top of our salary to play the game. So they were,
wow.
So there I was, you know, I'd start playing at like 6 o'clock at night and I'd be like, okay, I'll play for a couple hours and go get dinner. And then I look down at my watch and it'd be like 4 a.m.
Right.
Like, I thought that was a couple hours, you know, right. Just suddenly the whole night would go by.
Diablo can do that to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It did that to me more than one night.
Yeah.
That game was a lot of fun to be part of. That back then we used to, I mean, there, like I said, there was 9 guys doing all the cinematics and I remember we shot a lot of animatics on video. Mm-hmm. Like that we just, the entire cinematic sequence we filmed like with just mini DV.
Right.
Like ideas for shots, everything. And I know there's a reel somewhere with me jumping on a table. Like there's a reel somewhere with me jumping on a table as a monkey in forced perspective.
Right.
Because there was going to be a monkey jumping on a table in the intro.
Right. So it was your reference photo, right?
Yeah. Reference footage. Right. But then later, Warcraft 3 kicked in. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting at that time... these briefs would come in on you know, these like stories about the game, mm-hmm. you know, what's going to happen in the game sort of stories. Mm-hmm. And then that would be it. You know, like the characters would come in, there'd be like one drawing for a character and maybe from the back, you know, so you just see from him looking back at you and that's the only character design you get. Mm-hmm. And then you're tasked with modeling the character and putting it in a cinematic. But then it was sort of like, but what cinematic am I putting him in? You know, we don't have an idea yet. We just know that this character has to go in this cinematic. So I remember on Warcraft 3, the very start, we were, I think 2 years out and we didn't have any storyboards or anything like mm-hmm. that. And I went through and I storyboarded everything that I thought would work for the intro.
Uh-huh.
And I just gave it to Nick, the guy that was directing it, and said like, here you go. Like maybe some of these will be helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think he ended up using a couple of them.
Okay.
You know, threw a bunch of them out, but it was really hands-on like that. I mean, it was a cool experience to be at a place where you're working with a team that's that small and you get to sort of do that much.
Yeah. So you moved all the way down to Irvine, I guess, mm-hmm. right? How long were you there for?
Just under 5 years.
Oh, okay. So quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
Nice. And then you ended up back in LA somehow.
So, my buddy Brandon, was working at Uncharted Territory and they, they had picked up a TV series, like a mini series, with a dragon.
Okay.
Fafnir the Dragon as being one of the main characters. It was basically a low budget movie. And I was kind of burning out and needed to do something else. Yep. So I gave notice and jumped over to Uncharted and started making a dragon.
Right. So with Volker and those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, I met Volker, Mark.
Yeah.
Brilliant guys. Ben Grossman was there. Paul Graff was there.
I didn't realize Ben was at Uncharted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Ben and Paul were like the highfalutin compositors in the back.
Okay.
And then myself, Adam Watkins and Brandon Davis.
Adam's great.
Rodrigo Teixeira and Gabriel Kroner, a couple other guys.
I mean, these are all, to me, this was, there was a point where I was seeing stuff that was done by people like, and this is before I even got into visual effects, but I knew of your work, right? I knew of your work before I even got into it because I was studying it really well, like through architecture school after architecture school. I was looking at stuff that was done at places like Blur, at Blizzard, whatever. And I knew that like there, I knew what software you guys are using because you guys were using Macs, right?
Yes.
That's right. So I knew you guys were using Macs and it's like, okay, so I knew of what you were doing when Brandon was doing and stuff. And when I met, I think I might have communicated with Brandon on forums somehow, something, right? And then when I went to
thank you.
Sorry, we're just getting some refills here. When I went to DD, I think that's when the first time I might have met Brandon in person, although we knew of each other because I might have communicated with him. Okay. But I was like, Max, you're the guy who knows Mac.
Yes,
but I'm now the guy who's wants to do Houdini.
Right.
But I remember him as the Afterburn guy. I remember your work from your animation that you had done. And your concept artist. I knew of all this work that you had done, which is really interesting. So, you know, that's the thing. And I think when Brandon introduced me, he's like, this is John Chan. I was like, oh, I know of your work. And I think it would have been at DD. Might have been at a martini night.
Wow.
And I was like, I remember the stuff you did with the crow on that that Blizzard animatic, right?
Yeah,
and
cool.
And I didn't know about the Diablo one, but it was – There was that time, and you just named all, you know, Adam Watkins and Rainer Gombosch is another,
Rainer, right?
So all of these guys were at that, were those kind of like the ninjas of high-end visual effects that were done in Max, which was
indie,
right?
Visual effects.
Right.
Is what there I were, like to was, kind of was, call it.
Because there were the Lightwave guys.
Right.
And then there were the Max guys.
Right.
Right. You guys were the Max guys.
Yes.
Right. You know, it's not the video toaster and, you know, all that stuff like that. You guys are the Max guys.
Yeah. And there was a little Lightwave at Blizzard too. I mean, it was modeling, like the poly modeling tools in it were insane back in the day.
Could be.
Yeah. And there was a guy at Blizzard who was very Lightwave centric.
Right.
And then Max kind of caught up with its poly tools and I mean, the rest is history.
And it's not that I want to necessarily make it like, you know, you get pinhole you guys as by the software you used.
No, I mean,
there was a truth to that, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, I was,
because then the Maya guys were all the elitist. Well, we use SGIs or whatever, you know.
And Max was the underdog, and you know, I remember back when we started out and we had our little company going, Blur was the place to be. I think I think I'd sent a reel to Blur and maybe I got rejected. I don't know. I don't even remember. I don't think I ever even got a call back. But Blur parties, you know.
Yeah.
Like we were all kind of in love with Blur. And that was when it was Kinetics.
Right. I've got a Blur story to tell you. So now I go to Blur all the time now because I have a lot of people we work with at Blur and they're right around the corner, right?
Okay.
And so I just walk up there because it's not – I can actually walk to Blur from our office. He saw we drove by it. And I ring the doorbell and Betty answers the door and goes, hey, Betty, it's Chris. I'm here to see Tim or whatever, you know.
She's still there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. That's the story.
Okay.
You're going beyond this. And she goes, hi, honey. And she comes in and she comes out from behind the counter and she gives me a big hug and stuff. She's great. She's wonderful. She's great. We did a story behind the scenes at Blur, and I – she was super helpful to give us anything we needed in terms of access to people and scheduling and stuff like that. So at the end, we gave her a big bouquet of flowers to thank her for stuff. Oh. That has paid dividends in spades, right? Because she's always super nice to us now, yeah. Right? And I told her, well, she, you know, had to sign another NDA because they're working on some other super secret project, whatever. And I was like signing it, and I was telling her, it's like, you know, Betty, I want to tell you a story. It's like, it's about 20 or so years ago, maybe more, when I was thinking about doing some visual effects work, and I came from Max guy, right, because of architecture. I looked at Blur. Blur was, like you said, it was the place, right? It was the Max underdog high-quality work that was being done. So I it was one of the top places, right?
Yeah.
You know, Blizzard was another one, obviously.
Right.
But I cold called Blur, and I just got Betty on the phone, right?
Oh, wow.
Right? Because she was the receptionist, right?
Okay.
And so I said, hi, my name's Sian. Like, I'm thinking I'd like to send my resume or my you know, job application in. Is there any job positions? And she goes, listen, if you want to get Tim's attention, you have to have a really good demo reel. So she broke down all the things I needed to do.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was like, told, because I didn't know what to do. It's like, yeah. Do I just send in my resume? It's like, I've got some stills of some architecture renderings I've done. And she goes, no, you need a demo reel. You need to show animation skills. And she basically like told me all this stuff that I need to know. And I was like, it was like a hard pill to swallow because I had no idea, right? Mm-hmm. It was a real hard pill to swallow. And then I did all those things, but it took me a year.
That's sort of the crutch of being a freelancer, right? You spend a lot of time freelancing, and then you spend a lot of time looking at everything you just did and repackaging it so you can sell it to somebody else.
Yes.
And get another job freelancing.
Right.
And then you have to figure out how to have time to create something new on the side.
Right. And then you hope that if you get another job freelancing, it's something that's good enough for you to put on your reel, because otherwise
and
you just
sometimes
wasted 3 months.
And you're just like, okay, I'm just going to sweep this one under the rug and go on to the next.
There's three months of stuff I can't do, but at least I got paid, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. But anyway, I told her that. I was like, if it wasn't for that advice, I don't think I would be where I am in my career. And she does, you know, sometimes a receptionist at an animation company can really
connect the dots.
She's amazing.
She's an amazing lady.
Yeah.
She's still there. I remember just how warm and wonderful she was when I worked there in 2005. I mean,
yep.
It was just, yeah, cool.
Yep.
Cool company.
I think she was there from the very beginning.
Hmm.
She might have been.
Yeah.
So she's great. But yes, so Blur is really cool. So you sent a reel to Blur, you said?
Yeah. So, when I was coming out of the company that I started with my buddies in 97, mm-hmm. 96 timeframe, I sent a reel out to a lot of places, and I think Blur was one of them. Blur was always this place because we were Max users that we knew was a cool, like it was the shop. Like you, and you know, they always, the Crystal Method, they had like the cool.
Yeah.
Parties and the
I think Tim is friends with the Crystal Method guys. Must be.
Because it has to be. I mean, he's done good in that respect.
Yeah. So just so people know, Blur used to have, every time SIGGRAPH was in LA,
they had the coolest party.
And it was the Blur party.
Yeah.
And they would have a party where you would go, the Blur party, and Crystal Method would be playing at the Blur party.
Right.
So, which is insane.
You had to go.
You
had to figure out a way to go. Yeah. I think I applied there coming out before Blizzard. But then at Blizzard, after leaving Blizzard,
after Uncharted?
After Uncharted.
Okay.
I think that was the last time I cut a reel.
Okay.
Which was 2007, 2008 timeframe. And after that, I made a pact with myself that I would never cut a reel again.
Okay. So why you wanted to be – you wanted – why?
I felt I climaxed as a visual effects artist,
right.
Sort of. I felt like I that was it.
So you didn't want to do visual effects?
It's not that I didn't want to do visual effects. It's just not what I got into the industry to do.
Okay.
And I don't like being in a situation where I'm looking back on what I did, as opposed to working on something now and looking forward on what I want to do next.
Okay.
Also, I've always it was weird in Blizzard. When I was at Blizzard, there was this really strong mantra of you can't have a website.
Oh, wait. You can't have your own personal website?
Yeah, back then you couldn't have your own personal website. You weren't allowed.
Okay. Yeah, how can they control that?
They can't. Okay. So, I mean, today everybody has their own personal website.
Right.
But back then you couldn't, and it pissed a lot of us off.
What was the point? Was there just competing against her?
It was competing. Like, you didn't want to take the...
They didn't want to take their intellectual property, put it on someone else's website.
It was a bit of that. It was probably a bit of ego. Like, and it was also a bit of... Hey, look, we all worked on this stuff. Didn't want any one person to shine.
To take the credit
for it. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that changed. And but that instilled in me this sort of sense of I want the work to speak for me.
Yes.
I don't want to speak for myself
yep.
in a way. Like, I just – like, if you want to hire me, you'll find me through what I do and what I've done. Everybody hates having to look for a job, right?
Yeah.
Coming out on uncharted territory, suddenly I was like, well, what am I going to do next? Because that was also my first time outside of this big corporation that was Blizzard, which right. had this huge safety net where when stuff slowed down, you still had a job. Mm-hmm. Uncharted stuff slowed down. Okay, we're done.
Yeah. They shut down the whole company.
Yeah, they shut down the whole company.
That was a very unique business model.
And it seems to have been very successful for them.
Right. Just so people know, basically Uncharted is, you know, Mark and Volker. Mm-hmm. And when they have a job, they rent a space, they ramp up, they buy a bunch of computers, hire a bunch of people, work on this project. Could be a movie. They did Independence Day, the new Independence Day resurgence. Mm-hmm. They did a whole bunch of stuff. Well, they did the first Independence Day.
Yeah.
Anyway, they've done a whole bunch of work that way. Oh, 2012.
Yep.
And then once the movie's done, instead of worrying about getting next job, they just literally shut down the whole company.
Right.
They sell off all the computers. Everyone's let go. And
actually, at one point, I remember they were shutting down after a gig. And that was the second time I started a company. That was a visual effects company.
Right.
And we came – myself and a few partners came through and bought all their leftover hardware.
Which they sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we threw it in and we actually took their space.
Right.
Wow. We took over their space for a while and we were doing televised or television visual effects. And that was back when TV wasn't what it is today.
Right.
So
it's not like Game of Thrones.
Not like Game of Thrones. Yeah. Right. It was King Tut's tomb and like right. Hallmark Channel stuff. So the budgets were just like
super low
and production value was super low. And it was just, but I was, you know, I had some producer friends that had seats at the production companies that were making the entire film.
Right.
So they would then call me up and say, hey, let's partner. Let's start a visual effects company.
Yep.
You'll be the visual effects arm. And we did that for a while. We also did a film scanning thing for a while.
Okay.
Which was mildly nightmarish. Made me not ever want to touch film again.
Well, no one does anymore.
So. Yeah. I mean, I remember going to the film scanning room once and seeing film shooting off the scanner and just falling into the middle of the room. And I was just like, all right, close the door. Shut this business down. It's not for me. coming out of Uncharted, I cut a reel and I made this really complicated DVD demo reel where you could play my reel, play behind the scenes stuff. There was some extra things that you could play and the whole thing was packaged really nice. I was into this. I was more into the packaging, I think, than I was into the reel.
Interesting.
And I sent that around to everybody, and I got a lot of calls. And
oh, really?
I did get a call from Blur at that point.
Okay.
And I think they were kind of over the moon to have me, and I went in for the summer of 2005 to help out with E3 stuff. And ironically enough, I was working on Blizzard North was the company that made Diablo.
And okay.
Blizzard South was the company that made StarCraft and WarCraft.
Yes. Okay.
And right around the time I left Blizzard, or right after, the Blizzard North guys quit and started their own company. They landed a big fat production deal to make their next game.
Okay.
And Blur got hired to do the cinematics. Uh-huh. So I ended up at Blur working on cinematics
for
them.
Basically Blizzard North.
Yeah, for Blizzard North, which I thought was kind of ironic, but right. also interesting. That was Hellgate London.
Huh.
Was the name of the game.
Wow. Okay.
I worked on that. I worked on some X-Men cinematics. Tim Miller is a huge X-Men fan.
Right.
At least that's, I took that away from Blur, and I will bet money.
Yeah.
I will bet money that he gets to direct a reboot of that franchise at some X-Men. Point.
You think it's going to reboot?
Oh, it's got to reboot.
Well, I guess so. It's about time. They've only.
I mean, it's not about time. The first version of it was just like not X-Men. It was like a movie version of X-Men.
Right.
Some sort of weird Hollywood movie version of X-Men.
Okay.
I mean, all those actors and it was fantastic work. It's it's a beautiful franchise, but it's just a true to the comic reboot would be really cool.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. And I know of no bigger fan, so it's like.
Well, Deadpool's technically part of X-Men.
It is. Yeah, so there you go.
All right.
And that's more true to the comic, I think, than.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I'm just speculating here. You know,
you're just speculating.
I'm just totally
speculating. I know you're totally speculating. Yeah. But isn't Deadpool also related to Spider-Man?
I'm not that big of a – I don't know.
I don't know. My kid used to watch these cartoons sometimes and so
– I mean, I watched the Spider-Man cartoon when I was a kid, if that's
– Yeah, but I think that they had Deadpool in there too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, so
anyway,
more origin story stuff.
Yes, yes, yes.
After Blur or during Blur, I had a really good friend at Autodesk who's no longer at Autodesk, but Vincent Brisebois.
Okay.
Brisebois. He knew David Lynch.
Oh.
And David wanted to do a test for an animated CG film.
Okay.
And so he introduced me to David.
Uh-huh.
So I went up to David's house.
Wow.
Got to meet David Lynch.
It's on Mulholland Drive or something?
Yep. He has like two.
Surprise.
Yeah, he has two or three houses. I think it's he has two houses that are like in a
mm-hmm.
row.
Mm-hmm.
One's where he lives, one's his studio.
Uh-huh.
And I met him and I got some concept art from him of like his concept art of what the character is and a script, like a full script.
Mm-hmm.
And then a audio file of what he wanted the character to say.
Okay.
And then I wrote a little budget of what this would cost.
Mm-hmm.
Gave him the budget and they said no.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the budget was probably, I don't think David's used to what it cost to make animation.
Well, but, I mean, this was 2005. So I think it was like $8,500.
Okay.
Yeah, he just said, this is it. No, this is a test. We're not going to pay you that. Yeah, want you to do it. And I was like, sure.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do it. Why not?
Okay.
Sometimes you got to do a gig to get a gig, right?
Okay.
And I mean, I found as a freelancer, sometimes, I mean, look, you're always putting together, at least in the past, I've put together a lot of proposals for jobs.
Yep.
And I consider this a proposal. Like, hey,
sure.
I'm going to do this. We'll see where it goes.
Right.
And so I, you know, I called all my friends that were kind of available or not available that could do parts of it that I couldn't do.
Right.
Brandon, I think, did a background for it, like a sky. And Paul Hormus did the character rig.
Okay.
And then I animated and composited this little character creature thing for David.
Right.
Standing in front of the camera, talking to the camera. And I did the same thing we did at Blizzard, which was I put the camera on myself and put a suit on and performed the lines to the camera so I could get like animation reference as much as possible. And ironically enough, during that entire performance, I had a huge zit on the center of my head.
Okay.
Luckily, David never saw it. But
right.
So I from that, I extrapolated this little character and made this little, it was about 30 seconds talking to the camera, this little creature, gave it to David and then that disappeared.
Okay. Did he like it?
I think he liked it. I loved it. I thought it was great. I had done a lot of character design sketches based on his design to sort of expand it into 3D because his design was very two-dimensional. Uh-huh. And, you know, we needed to build a 3D character with volume.
Right.
So that was a fun process, kind of going back and forth, the yes and no's of what worked and what didn't work. And then that led to a lot of work for him. Like, I then worked on easily half a dozen projects for him that were all
for David Lynch.
Yeah. Yeah. That were all,
CG stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Like art installations and, we did a film that he directed that was all CG. That was about a 7-minute piece. That was a dome film. It was all on diamonds.
Wow.
It was, for Art Basel in Miami Beach, which okay. I'd never heard of before. We ended up doing the film, but it's this, you know, sort of contemporary art or modern art exhibition. And Cartier had a dome, the Cartier Dome, which is basically this really lavish showroom floor for diamonds, for their necklaces and jewelry. And David came in and designed the entire showroom and then designed and directed the film that played above on the screen.
Okay.
And then I created all the art and animation for it.
Right.
So
that was awesome.
That was 3 months of sitting with David and just like he'd be sitting over my shoulder and we'd be jamming, making stuff.
That's an experience.
It was a wonderful, amazing experience. That's, yeah. And then they flew me out to Miami for the actual,
art opening?
Well, it's a convention.
Convention.
It's like art convention in Miami, right. Which blew my mind because I'm like, this is weird, but cool. Like, it's just like, we grew up in the world of consumer electronic shows and like there's a convention for everything, but this was a art convention, totally different thing. And so and then I hung out with him for like a week in Miami screening this movie and going out to dinner and socializing with people that were way above my pay grade.
Right. okay. Did you have a little imposter syndrome?
Totally. Yeah. No, I put on a cheap suit and pretended like I knew what I was doing and I was supposed to be there. And, you know, but, and to a degree I did. I mean, we made the film. So,
sure.
And this was before VR. So it was a 4K by 4K rendered. We rendered it all in V-Ray.
Oh, okay.
Diamond.
Is that available to find somewhere? Is that online?
I could give you a copy. Sure. But you need to experience on a dome.
Right. No. Yeah, of course.
Could you
put it in VR?
I don't see why not.
You should do that.
Well, I mean, it'd be a 2D image playing in VR.
Yeah, that's fine. But you can make a dome in VR.
Sure, yeah.
And then project that video onto that dome in VR, and then you could experience it.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
For sure. Yeah.
7 minutes, you said?
I think it was about 7 minutes.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And it was just all these random shots of diamonds and fire and things falling against the...
And so Cartier commissioned David Lynch.
Yeah, and then I wrote a budget for that, and then got the green light, and then did that, and I rendered a bunch of computers from Bell Computer on the I think advice of Rob Niederhorst at the time.
Bell Computer, not Dell Computer.
Right? Bell, yes.
Right.
And I installed all those in David's studio, and then blew the power a number of times.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens.
And he used to walk by and call that Niagara Falls because it sounded like Niagara Falls.
Oh, all the...
Sitting there running at full speed.
Yep. Yeah. Niederhorst, when we were at... was it Bell? No, it wasn't Bell. It was someone else. Niederhorst, when we were starting up SpeedShape, it was like a nightmare. Buy a whole bunch of computers. This is when Athlons were big. Remember the Athlon processor?
Okay.
It was the AMDs. It was the first time the AMD processors were like outperforming Intel. Now it's starting to happen again, right? And the AMDs had these Athlon processors. And so we decided we were going to have an entire render farm with these Athlon processors, which were superior, but they required a whole lot of cooling. So it's just like, And then we'd like, these computers are too loud. So then we had to find an enclosure to put the computers in. And then the computers were too hot. So then we had to find an air conditioning system that would cool off the computers. And then we blew the power. And then we had to find, like, it was just like nonstop.
One thing
after another.
I'm so glad the cloud is here. And that's the only reason I appreciate the cloud.
Right.
That's the only data it can have. Anything I want to render. And then, you know.
Right. Because I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Yeah.
It's months of oh, no, we blew this thing.
Yeah.
Oh, no, now we got to call the city of Santa Monica and get them to upgrade our power from, you know, 100 amps to 200 amps or 300 amps or whatever the hell it is.
I remember at Uncharted Territory during the 11th hour of – I forget which show. It was probably Day After Tomorrow or because I slightly overlapped on – I didn't want to work on Day After Tomorrow.
Okay.
Like I just didn't like the movie.
Right.
I just thought this movie's – not for me. But I did work on it. Didn't get a credit, but whatever. But I remember the 11th hour of that. I think it was that. Mark Weigert built a render farm out of motherboards that he ordered or bought from Fry's and a CD rack that like he got from like it literally took two CD racks, those old wire CD racks, and he like fused them together and put a motherboard in every single slot. And
just empty.
Yeah, with a power supply. And then he ordered all these power supplies. I remember like the power supplies were the wrong power supply. So instead of sending them back, like there wasn't enough time to send them back. Like he took them all apart individually and rewired the power supplies internally and put them all back together. He did this all in one night.
Oh, right? My God.
And built this render farm that was like, you know.
Just empty motherboards.
Empty motherboards. CPUs.
CPU RAM.
Power supplies. The whole thing networked together.
Yeah.
Next morning was up and running, software installed, everything.
Oh, my God.
It just blew my mind. I was like,
how many of these? Like 10 or 20?
Easily, yeah.
Wow.
Something, yeah. I was like, that's just the level of, like, I don't have that stick-to-itiveness when it comes to technology.
Yeah, not worth it to me.
Yeah. After a while, I was just like, okay, this computer's broken. It might be able to be fixed, but no, for me, it's broken.
Right. Yep. Yep. Interesting. Okay, so you're working for Lynch, and then had that amazing experience. Where were you going from there?
Well, you know, I kept working for him on and off over the years.
Yeah.
There was an art installation in Paris. There was a nightclub in Paris that he did. That we were very. It was like three stories underground. And some of the steel in the building was from the Eiffel Tower or something. And like there was no walls that could be blown out. It was everything was very tight, confined spaces, and he designed the entire nightclub. But you know that was basically me sitting at a computer with him sitting behind me, saying, you know, do this, do that, do this, that. Actually, no, that started with Vincent. Vincent did a first pass on that, where he did a look. Him and David did a look frame that was like this is, I think, sold. It's what sold the project, and then I got that, and then David and I sat down and you know took that apart
right.
and built out the entire club. A couple commercials, I think.
Okay.
Some visual, a lot of visual effects shoots.
Okay.
Like elements.
Element shoots, okay.
Well, okay. No, I've done a lot of visual effects. I bought a Red camera over the years.
Okay.
Wasted a lot of money on that. not a waste, but I always had an affinity for emerging camera technologies.
Sure.
And that one really changed the game. In my opinion. And so when I saw it and the price point it was at, I was like, okay, I'm buying one of these.
They're like 50 grand, weren't they?
No, at the time they were like 20. And if you
20 grand.
Yeah, right. If you bought in early, you got them for less.
Which, by the way, at that time for a camera like that was a bargain.
Yeah, exactly.
Because cameras like that used to be about, you know, 100,000.
Right. In my mind, I was thinking like, okay, I can use this to sort of make the leap into cinematography and get into that business. But then I was quickly realizing that everybody wanted to rent me and my camera for $100 for the day.
Right.
And I was like, wait a minute. No, I'll make more money as staying in the visual effects and look development business.
Right.
But that said, I opened it up to all my friends and was just like, yeah, if you got a shoot you want to do, let's do it. So I did a shoot with David where we just shot visual effects elements on set, which was really cool. And then my neighbors did a lot of shoots with them for, they've done a ton of visual effects for a large variety of films.
Right.
Crazy Horse effects. And, you know, so yeah. And then after that, oh geez. Got into game development again.
Okay.
Released a game in 2012 on the iPad when the iPad was, I think iPad 2 is what we released it on.
Okay.
When that format, you know, went from the iPhone to a tablet size, I was like, this is a new interface that really needs,
especially from your passion for consoles, right?
Yeah, exactly. I just thought that I've always hated using console controllers because they're just too small, mm-hmm. and I want something that's more interactive, that has more range.
Yep.
And a tablet, you know, touchscreen, the fidelity that's going on there, I just think that like that
it's
is
a different interface.
Oh, it's a window to a new world. Yep. You know. Yep. So, of course, make a side scroller.
Right.
So. I have a really good buddy who's a programmer producer guy from Doom era. He was a coder on Doom, and he was teaching a class at Academy of Art, and we took his graduating class, and we all made a game together.
Okay.
And that got I think about 500,000 downloads. Most of those was probably when we went free, because we did go free for a long period of time.
Okay.
But it was just a classic sort of side scroller.
Nice.
I call it a squad based puzzle adventure game. It was heavily inspired by Lost Vikings.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember that for the Super Nintendo.
Nope.
Okay. Yeah. Very early Blizzard game.
Okay.
And let me see. After that. I got into key art.
Key art. Okay.
Yeah. Video game key art. Well, yeah, no, video game key art.
Okay.
Yeah. Got hired at a key art company in downtown, in Hollywood, Trailer Park.
Yes.
Yeah. That was the only staff job I've had since.
Since Blizzard probably.
No, right? Since Uncharted.
Uncharted. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Which was kind of staff.
Kind of staff. Right.
Yeah. And for the most part, I was a freelancer there. Like, I wasn't really 100% staff.
Uh-huh.
That was a lot of fun. The key art business. Like, I'd always collected movie.
Explain to people what key art is so people.
Oh, so it's the tip of the spear when it comes to a product. It's the front-facing art. So
right.
It's the brand. It's the poster.
It's the label.
It's the label. It's right. It's as a creative person, it's the most fun you can have without having to do the hard work.
Right.
Because you get all the resources that have already been made. And when you're dealing with a really cool project, like I got to do all the key art for the first Wolfenstein game. The first remake of
Wolfenstein.
So the most recent remake, I think they're on Wolfenstein 2 now, but the first one, they saw a bunch of key art I had done prior for Batman Arkham City.
Oh, okay.
And I'd worked on the team that did that key art. Like mm-hmm. there was an image for Arkham City that like I kind of considered mine because I'd thought up the concept and, you know, but I didn't do the finish on it. I wasn't the creative director that came up with the look for it, but I thought up the layout and the composition of it. And it got bought off by the client and became one of the most prominent images in the campaign. So I was very proud of it. So the ad agency that had the Wolfenstein marketing campaign had seen that art and approached me randomly and said, "Hey, we've got Wolfenstein. We want you to do it. We want you to do all of it, though." So they gave me like every single key art image for that campaign, and each of those images is like, I'm gonna say 20,000 pixels wide.
Wow!
Because it's stuff that has to go, you know, on a billboard.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about it is you get all the assets that are sourced from the developers. So it's like when you have a project like Batman or Wolfenstein, you're getting all these incredible assets, and they're just like, take this stuff and make it look cooler.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's a tough job. I mean, it is to a degree, but it's also a lot of fun because it's like, I've always been a collector of movie posters and just love, like, I love the poster. The poster is like what sells it. It's like, in one image, can you sell an entire movie, or can you sell an entire concept? Yeah. You know, coming up with that one image that does it is important.
Trailer Park is a pretty big company for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they were huge.
So they do all the – they're obviously known for their trailers, but they also do a lot of – anything that's marketing of a game or a movie or TV show, they create that content in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So I worked for –
That's in Hollywood.
Yes, it was. Yeah. So I worked
for – near the CNN building, am I right?
It's on Sunset.
I
think it's on Sunset.
Yep.
The fun thing was at the top of the building, you look down and everybody looks like a little ant, and you'd always see like the street performers, you know, that are dressed as like Superman or Spider-Man out there jumping around doing stuff. And I remember very distinctly one time seeing Superman and Spider-Man getting in a fight, and then seeing Spider-Man on a cop car handcuffed, you know, like this is just going on in Hollywood Boulevard or there's like a premiere, you know, and it's just, you're just sitting up there gawking at the whole thing. But Trailer Park was a fantastic experience. I worked for Patrick Dillon. He was the creative director there, and Greg Huber was the finisher, and those guys are just phenomenal. Like, they're just incredible guys, key art business wise. Pat was like the he has his own company now and does his own thing, but like one of the most amazing thinkers when it comes to that space, you know, of designs and ideas and projects and presentations of art. Like, just, he just blew my mind. Like, he was the one that came up with the look for Arkham City. That black and white look, which, you know, from the CG standpoint, you're like, well, yeah, duh. It's like, it's an ambient occlusion pass, but you know, putting in spot color and taking it to the level he took it, it's like, how come nobody has thought about this before? It's sort of what I was thinking. It's such an obviously great idea. And holy crap, they're doing it so well. So yeah, that was a great experience.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
And that led to a lot of key art freelancing. And over the years, I got Wolfenstein on my own.
Right.
And then I did a handful of other things, like some Final Fantasy stuff. Nazgoth. There was a game called Nazgoth.
Okay.
That's
pretty cool.
Yeah. And then of recent, I've been working with a group of guys in downtown LA developing content. Yeah,
so you are making content. This is like TV stuff, film stuff,
animated and live action.
Okay.
This is content development, but it's all pre-production type stuff. It's all conceptual, so it's just, you know, putting together reels and taking an idea that's in script form and taking that sort of to the visual level,
okay,
and putting together all.
So
the
you
visuals.
Guys are developing IP that you're considering with different people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the name of your company?
Sky Carousel.
Sky Carousel.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. What kind of content are you guys making?
A lot of interesting genres: science fiction, kids. I want to say kids and family.
Kids and family oriented?
I want to say kids and family as its own genre.
Kids and family as a genre.
As a genre.
Are you doing content that's also for more mature audiences?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I would
say, like, things like Love, Death, and Robots right now is like huge, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I wouldn't say we're quite that mature.
Okay.
Like, we're somewhere maybe between that and, you know, Coco. So.
Got it.
Yeah, I mean, genre-wise, it's science fiction. I hate using the word steampunk because it's almost got this sort of toxicity in Hollywood. Science and technology, maybe historical science and technology is a way to say that better.
Okay.
Kids and family.
Are you back to your treehouse?
Treehouse.
You remember like the beginning when you had the office and you were creating a bunch of stuff? Are you with these guys creating a bunch of content downtown? Who's in your company?
Oh, a group of people.
Yeah. Okay. You have to be a little. I understand your problem. So, I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions.
Yeah, I don't know how much of this I'm allowed to say, but you know, I'm not going to give away any big details. And if there's something here I can't say, maybe we could do a little editing later.
Sure.
Who knows?
Then we don't. Then, you know what? Let's not even bother. Sounds fabulous. I really want to know more about it.
Yeah.
As you already know, we're recording this podcast, you know, when we are, and then we'll release it much later. So if there's stuff that's like coming up, then I can announce at the beginning of the podcast.
Very cool. Yeah. It started as an offshoot of Magnopus.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And those guys are amazing. Like I worked with all those guys back in the day.
Were you at Magnopus for a little bit?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we started as an incubator there and grew out of it.
Okay. Yeah, I love Magnopus.
Me too.
Yeah, and downtown's great.
Yeah, and what a great place to put a startup.
Yes.
Yeah.
What I always loved about Magnopus is when I walk in there, it really feels like I am walking into that scene in the James Bond film when he goes to visit Q.
Yes.
It's like retina scan. They literally have a retina scanner.
I know, yeah.
To get into the office. And then you get in there and then there's like weird technical experiments everywhere. And you just want to play with all the toys. And like, don't shoot that. No, that's not ready for consumption yet. But there's tons of stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So since that, I've been like we finished a bunch of reels at the beginning. No, somewhere the beginning of the summer, I would say. And I've been just taking time off to absorb how much this industry has changed.
Okay.
And train and write. I have a story I've been writing that's a true story. That takes place in Vietnam from 68 to 75, 79, really.
Right.
And then I have another story I've been developing that's completely different. That's I hate using the word steampunk, but is steampunk, and it's a different take on steampunk.
Uh-huh.
It's a graphic novel. Just doing that.
Okay.
I tend to funnel all my extracurricular work into starting with story development, and then, you know, when I'm like, okay, I need to become a better character modeler, I'll figure out a character that's related to the story and work on that, or, you know, key art or whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. Everything kind of ties back into a greater goal.
Okay.
Which is a double-edged sword, because the downside is that you can spend a lot of time in development on like, where is this going to go? What's the purpose of what you're doing? Versus, I just need to brush up on these skills. So I got to go back to this. I should just be, you know, focusing on doing anatomy sculptures versus wait, no. Why am I building this character? What's his purpose?
Sure. I hear you. All right. Well, John, it's been amazing. We're actually well over an hour.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It goes quickly. It feels like it goes quickly sometimes. But I think we're caught up to the present.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, we've gone through the origin story.
Yeah.
All right.
That's pretty good stuff. I think it's really fascinating. You've hit some interesting landmarks along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel I've been very lucky in my career, you know? Like, I just feel I've been very fortunate to work with some really amazing people.
Well, you've had some opportunities that have presented themselves, but you've pushed through on those opportunities based on your talent.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Talent's one thing, but also just, you know, like, I always try to stay in touch with good people. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of interesting people in this business is a nice way to say it.
Is that a red phone, by the way?
Yeah, it is.
I just realized, like, you've got a red phone.
Yeah. Well, you know, I bought a red camera, so why not jump on the red phone bandwagon? Okay. Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot of interesting people in this business, and, you know, there's a lot of characters that there's a lot of personality types that you just don't want to be exposed to or deal with.
Okay.
And it's about, I think, finding the right people that are, you know, that are good people.
Yeah.
And staying in contact with them and you know, going forward and doing cool stuff.
Yeah. I think, I mean, you've stayed in touch with that group, right? You've had your niche groups, your commandos, your platoon.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And those are good guys. You know, people like Brandon, he's a great guy. He's one of the greatest people I know in the world, honestly speaking.
Agreed.
And so that's, I can understand the loyalty you guys feel for each other, because I think it's important. And listen, going to see, like hanging out with David Lynch, yes, that's an opportunity that randomly presented itself, but it would never have happened if you hadn't done all the work and hadn't met all the people and did all the things and proven yourself the person you were for that opportunity to happen, right? And yes, you feel a little bit like an imposter syndrome because you're not used to hanging out with artsy-fartsy people
and
galas.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't know. I think it's great. I think it's amazing. I'm really fascinated. I really want to hear more about your content stuff.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe even visit you guys and see what's going on over
there. Yeah.
So, but yeah, listen, thank you so much for doing this and for coming by, hanging out. And thank you for the amazing rye whiskey that we've had. It's delicious. Much appreciated.
My pleasure.
But yeah, well, thanks, John.
Thank you. Thank you.